Chapter 5. This was not going to be pretty. The note, the "you have a son" note, hadn't been sealed. Gavin could pretty much guarantee that the White's people read all of his correspondence. But Caris had laughed after giving him the note, which meant she hadn't. So she didn't know. Yet. But she'd gone to report to the White, where Gavin was expected. He rolled his shoulders and stretched his neck to one side and then the other, each giving a satisfying little pop, then started walking. His blackguards fell in step behind him, each carrying a wheel-locked musket and wearing an ataghan or other weapon. He climbed the stairs to the open roof balcony of the Chromeria. As always, he noticed Caris first. She was short, with a naturally curvy figure now carved into two hard planes and veins by years of strenuous training. Her hair was long and straight and platinum blonde today. Yesterday it had been pink. Gavin liked it blonde. Blonde usually meant she was in a good mood. Her hair colour changes were nothing magical, or she just liked to change frequently. Or maybe she figured she stood out so much that she might as well not even try to blend in. Like the other blackguards protecting the White, Caris wore fine black trousers and blouse, cut for fighting and plain except for the embroidery of her rank on the shoulder and at the neck in gold thread. Like the others, she carried a slim black ataghan, a slightly forward-curving sword with a single cutting edge for most of its length, and rather than a shield, a metal parrying stick with a punch dagger in the middle. Like the others, she was extensively trained in the use of both and a number of other weapons. Unlike the others, her skin wasn't the deep black of a Parian or an Elysian. Nor was her mood dark, apparently. There was a mischievous little twist to her lips. Gavin raised a brow at her, pretending to be mildly peeved about her earlier prank with the shades in his room, and came to stand before the White. Aurea Pular was a shrunken old woman who was taking more and more to the wheeled chair she sat in now. Her blackguards made sure that every guard rotation had at least one burly man in case she needed to be carried up or downstairs. But despite her physical infirmity, Aurea Pular hadn't needed to fend off a challenger for the White Robe for more than a decade. Most people couldn't even remember her real name. She simply was the White.
"Are you ready?" she asked.
Even after all these years, she still had trouble accepting that this wasn't hard for him. "I'll manage."
"You always do," she said.
Her eyes were clear and grey, except for two broad arcs of colour surrounding each iris, blue on top and green below. The White was a blue-green bichrome. But those arcs of colour were washed out in her eyes, desaturated now because she hadn't drafted in so long. But each arc was as thick as possible, extending from the pupil out to the very edge of each iris. If she ever drafted again, she'd break the halo. The colour would break through into the whites of each eye, and that would be the end of her. That was why she didn't wear coloured spectacles. Unlike other retired drafters, she didn't even continue the pretense of carrying around her unused spectacles to remind everyone of what she once was. Aurea Pular was the White, and it was enough. Gavin headed to the dais. Above it, mounted on arcing tracks so it could be adjusted for any time of day or month of the year, a great polished crystal hung. He didn't need it, never had, but it seemed to make everyone more comfortable to think he required some crutch to handle so much light. He never got light sick, either. Life just wasn't fair. "Any special requests?" he asked. How exactly the prism felt the imbalances in the world's magic was still a mystery. Shrouded in religious hokum about the prism being connected straight to Orholam, and therefore all the satrapies, the subject had not even been studied before Gavin became the prism. Even the White had been quite nearly fearful when she asked about it, and she was as brassy a woman as Gavin had ever met. Not that they'd made much progress, but long ago he and the White had struck a bargain. She would study him intensely, and he would cooperate, and in turn she would allow him to travel without blackguards dogging his every step. It worked, mostly. Sometimes he couldn't help but tease her, since it seemed they hadn't learned anything in the 16 years he'd been the prism. Of course, when he pushed her too far, she'd bring him up here and say she really needed to examine how the light moved through his skin. So he'd balance, in the open air, in the winter, naked. Not pleasant, Gavin being Gavin, he'd learned pretty much exactly where the line was. Emperor of the Seven Satrapies, indeed.
"I'd like you to start allowing the Blackguard to do their jobs, Lord Prism."
"I meant about the balancing."
"They train their whole lives to serve us. They risk their lives, and you disappear every week. We agreed you could travel without them, but only during emergencies."
"Service? It's a little more complicated than that." "I live dangerous," Gavin said. They fought about this all the time. Doubtless the White figured that if she didn't make a show here, he would push for more freedom. Doubtless she was right. Gavin looked at the White flatly. The White looked at Gavin flatly. The Blackguards were very, very quiet. "Is this how you would have handled them, brother? Or would you have simply charmed them into submission? Everything in my life is about power."
"Nothing special today,"
the White said. Gavin began. A Prism, at core, did two things no one else could do. First, Gavin could split light into its component colours without external aids. A normal red drafter could draft only an arc of red, some a wider arc, some a lesser arc. In order to draft, they had to be seeing red. Red rocks, blood, sunset, a desert, whatever. Or, as drafters had learned long ago, they could wear red spectacles, which filtered the sun's white light to deliver only red. It gave less power, but it was better than being utterly dependent on one's surroundings. The same limitations apply to every drafter. Monochromes could draft only one colour. Bichromes could draft two colours. Generally, it was colours that bordered each other, like red and orange or yellow and green. Polychromes, those who controlled three or more colours, were the rarest. But even they had to draft from the colours they could see. Only the Prism never needed spectacles. Only Gavin could split light within himself. That was convenient for Gavin, but it didn't help anyone else. What did help was this: standing atop the Chromaria, light streaming through his eyes, filling his skin with every colour in the spectrum, bleeding out of every pore, he could feel the imbalances in magic in all the world. "To the southeast, like before," Gavin said. "Deep in Tyria. Likely Kelfing. Someone's using sub-red. And lots of it." Heat and fire usually meant war magic. It was the first place most non-drafting warlords or satraps went when they wanted to kill people. No subtlety. The amount of sub-red being used in Tyria meant either they'd been having a quiet war, or the new satrap, Rask Kharadul, had set up his own school to train battle drafters. It wouldn't be something his neighbours would be happy to learn. The Hrothgari governor who occupied Tyria's former capital garrison definitely wouldn't be happy to learn it. In addition to the surfeit of sub-red, more red magic than blue had been used since Gavin last balanced, and more green than orange. The system was self-regulating initially. If red drafters around the world used too much red, it would begin to get harder for them to draft, and simultaneously easier for the blues. Sealed red Luxin would unravel more easily, while sealed blue would seal better. At that level, it was an inconvenience, an annoyance. Legends spoke of an era before Lucidonius came and brought the true worship of Orholm, when the magic centres had been spread throughout the world, green in what was now Hrothgar, red in Atash, and so forth, all worshipping pagan gods and mired in superstition and ignorance. Some warlord had massacred almost all the blues. Within months, they said, the Cerulean Sea had turned to blood. The waters choked of life. Fishermen on every side of the sea had starved. The few surviving blue drafters had heroically worked to bring the balance back by themselves, using so much blue magic that they killed themselves. The seas cleared, and the red drafters returned to drafting as before, but this time there were no blue drafters left. Anything using red Luxin failed. The seas turned bloody again. Famine and disease descended. And so it went. Nearly every generation, huge natural disasters wiped out thousands who believed they'd done something to offend their capricious gods. Prisms prevented that. Gavin could feel what was out of balance long before there were any physical signs, and fix it by drafting the opposite colour. When prisms failed, as they inevitably did after 7, 14, or 21 years, the Chromeria had to prevent disasters the hard way. In addition to running around putting out fires, sometimes literally, they would send missives throughout the world, perhaps urging blues not to draft unless it was an emergency, and reds to draft more than usual. Because everyone could only draft a finite amount in their lives, that meant hastening the reds to their death and keeping the blues from doing useful work in all of the 7 satrapies. So at such time, the Chromeria sought a prism's replacement with great fervour, and Orholam was faithful to send a new prism every generation. Or so the teaching went. Except for Gavin's generation, when, in his ineffable wisdom, Orholam had somehow sent 2 and torn the world apart. Gavin spun in a slow circle, spreading his arms wide and releasing gouts of superviolet light to balance the sub-red, then red to balance blue, then orange to balance green. When the world felt right once more, he stopped. He turned and smiled at the white. Her expression, as usual, was a cipher. Her blackguards, every one of whom was a drafter and thus had an idea of how much power Gavin had just handled, looked similarly unimpressed. Or perhaps they were simply habituated. He was the prism, after all. It was his job to do the impossible. If anything, they relaxed slightly. Their job was to protect the white, even from him, if it came to it. Gavin was the prism, and thus ostensibly the emperor of the 7 satrapies. In reality, his duties were mostly religious. Prisms who became too much more than just figureheads found themselves forcibly retired, often permanently. The blackguard would die to protect him from anyone else, but the white was the head of the Chromeria. If it came to it, they'd fight for her, not him. If it did, they knew they would likely all die, but then that was what they trained for. Even Karis. Gavin wondered sometimes if that ever happened. Would Karis be the last to try to kill him, or the first?
"Karis," the white said, "there's a ship waiting for you, heading for Tyria. Take this. You can read it once you set sail. When you can, scull the rest of the way. Time is of the essence."
She handed Karis a folded note. It wasn't even sealed. Either the white trusted Karis not to even open it before her ship sailed, or she knew she'd read it immediately whether it was sealed or not. Gavin thought he knew Karis well, and he didn't know which she'd do. Karis took the note and bowed deeply to the white, never even glancing at Gavin. Then she turned and left. Gavin couldn't help but watch her go. Her figure svelte, graceful, powerful, but he kept his glance brief. The white would notice regardless, but if he stared, she'd probably say something. She waved her hand as Karis disappeared down the stairs, and the rest of the black guard withdrew from earshot.
"So, Gavin," she said, folding her arms, "a son. Explain."